You're listening to the Sex and Psychology Podcast, the sex ed you never got in school and won't get anywhere else. I am your host, Dr. Justin Lee Miller. I am a social psychologist and research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and author of the book, Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Have you ever felt like your job has gotten in the way of your sex life? Well, join the club. It's an extraordinarily common experience. Our work lives have a way of spilling over into the bedroom. Work can leave us tired or exhausted, heavily stressed, and highly distracted. And all of these things can put a damper on sexual desire, arousal, and pleasure. So maybe it's time to set some boundaries. In today's show, we're going to talk all about the negative ways in which work can interfere with sex, why this happens, and how we can stop it from happening in the first place. We're also going to talk about how to make sex a priority in your life so that you can really start to harness the stress-relieving benefits of it. Plus, another benefit of prioritizing sex is that it can actually give us a boost in the workplace. Now, just to be clear, I'm not talking about having sex at work, but research shows that having an active and healthy sex life outside of work can actually make us happier and more productive on the job. Yet another reason to have sex. I am joined once again by Amanda Jepson, a licensed professional counselor and ASEX-certified sex therapist. She is one of the co-founders of the nonprofit ReSpark Foundation. She is a clinical therapist at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs Veterans Health and Trauma Clinic, and a lecturer for the University of Colorado, Denver. This is going to be another important and very practical conversation. Stick around, and we're going to jump in right after the break. If you love the science of sex as much as I do, consider becoming a friend of the Kinsey Institute at Indiana University. The Kinsey Institute is the world's premier research organization on sex and relationships, and you can help them continue the legacy of Dr. Alfred Kinsey, whose pioneering research changed everything we think we know about sex. Visit kinseyinstitute.org to make an impact. Your donations can help support ongoing research projects on critical topics. You can also show your support by following Kinsey Institute on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you for supporting sex science. Okay, Amanda, let's talk about work and sex. Now, okay. I think this is a really interesting topic because our work lives and our sex lives have a way of bleeding over into one another. So in the research that I've seen, it's a bi-directional relationship. This means that if you bring work stress home with you, it can mess with your desire for and your enjoyment of sex. But it also means that if you have a healthy sex life, it can buffer you from some of the stress on the job, right? So it's important to find balance between the two so that work doesn't interfere with sex and so that sex can be this important stress reduction tool. So with that as our starting point, let me ask you this. How can work stress harm our sex lives? So regardless of the kind of job you have, what are just some general ways that work-related stress might interfere with sexual desire, arousal, or function?
Absolutely. I am so glad that you just talked about how it's a bi-directional influence, because that's most of what I talk about with people. But when we talk about how occupational stress or work stress can affect us, it's important to note that over half of people report that work has affected their sex drive negatively at some point throughout their career. So this is incredibly common. And it might be as simple as just noticing a decreased interest or desire for sex. It also means a very marked impact on actual sexual function. And so we know that for penis owners, that might be difficulty with maintaining an erection. It may be difficulty with achieving orgasm. For vulva owners, that might be issues with lubrication, and very specifically and much more common for vulva owners is inability to achieve orgasm. And so sexual function is also impacted. For a lot of people, they have a hard time switching contexts. So they're going from this high stress work environment, they're bringing work home with them, they're thinking about work, and then all of a sudden they're just supposed to flip a switch and be ready for sex and intimacy, but our brains don't work that way. And so they might have a hard time.
Don't you wish they did?
Right? I know, right? It'd be so great if you could just hit a button and all the work stress went away. Some people notice that they feel tired or actually physically exhausted. And we also know very specifically that when we're under a lot of stress, our body releases cortisol. And one of the long-term impacts of cortisol release is testosterone levels go down. testosterone is essentially the sex hormone. Testosterone influences sex drive and sexual interest. And so if you are under long-term occupational stress, it's likely that not only will you experience the behavioral or like the emotional impacts, but it will actually have a biological impact on your body.
Right. Thanks for sharing that. Now, I know that you do work with people who have occupations that take them to incredibly high stress environments, which can have huge impacts on their sex lives and relationships. So you do work with military populations and veterans and people who work in emergency situations as first responders. So tell us a little bit about your work with these populations. And when you're somebody who is in that super high stress sort of environment, what kind of impacts do you see on people's intimate lives?
So it's essentially just turned up to max. So a lot of my clients, 95% of my caseload actually has PTSD. And so it's not just work stress, there's trauma in the mix, both direct trauma and vicarious trauma that they're experiencing. And so we're seeing people stuck in fight or flight. We're seeing people with pretty significant guilt and shame or survivor guilt issues. We're seeing individuals that are having their body not able to respond, or their body responding in a non-concordant way, which means sometimes they're having sexual responses when they don't want them. And other times when they'd like them, their body is like, no, thank you. And so it's some of those things that we would see in a general population, just a little bit more profound because of the trauma piece. And even people that are not experiencing trauma on the job still have a hard time.
Yeah. And I also have to imagine that there are some unique partner dynamics there, right? Especially if you've got somebody who works in this very high stress environment or setting, and their partner maybe has an everyday office job or something else, you know, it might be hard to relate to, you know, the fact that each person might be coming from a very different place every day and bringing home very different baggage with them. So can you also speak to sort of just the partner dynamic and how this works when partners just have these very different occupational lives?
So I did a presentation years ago on military family. And one of the statistics that hit me pretty hard was understanding that for the military people who have PTSD, 40% of their partners are also likely to meet full criteria for PTSD, just from the experience of living with and being partnered with somebody who is in that place, that the trauma is actually either the vicarious trauma of what their partner went through or the symptoms and behaviors that can come along with PTSD. And so understanding that when you and your partner are in very different jobs and one of them is high stress, high trauma, it's going to come home and it's going to affect the partner unless you do something to stop that from happening. And it also means understanding that you can express empathy and understanding for your partner even without having had the same experiences with them. Being able to understand that their stress might be different, but that does not mean that your stress is less than. If your partner is coming back from a combat deployment and you are working an office job, you still get to be stressed with your office job sometimes. It doesn't have to be life or death for it to matter.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. And, you know, I hate to say trauma is contagious, but it has some way of working like that, where it can spread from one person to another within a relationship where there's that spillover trauma or it becomes vicarious trauma. And so, yeah, that can be another layer of complexity for therapists who are working with clients in this area. So you hit on this a little bit, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about the why question in terms of why work-related stress can have this pervasive impact on our intimate lives. And to me, I think it seems best understood as a biopsychosocial phenomenon. So on the biological side, you've got that fight or flight state, the stress hormones coursing through your body. That might lead to sleep disturbances. It might lead to people using substances like alcohol or other things in order to cope with that. On the psychological side of things, you can be very distracted and anxious. And then you've got the social and relational side of things where sometimes people just shut down. And so that can impair communication in general between partners. So to me, it seems like it's not just one thing, it's like literally everything. So does that make sense to you in terms of understanding what's going on here?
Absolutely. I'm just sitting here like nodding enthusiastically because it's important to understand that
we can be affected in one part of our life, but it can have a ripple throughout all of the other parts of our life. And if we are not intentional in either making it boundaried or preventing that spread, that we would absolutely expect seeing it impact all of those other areas. So yep, you hit the nail on the head right there.
Yeah. And so that makes it hard to kind of have like a focused or targeted response here, like where you just need to change one thing because there are so many different things going on all at once, right? So it's not a simple or easy answer. And we'll get into solutions in a moment. But, you know, I think one of the key ones here is that sleep disturbances, I think, are a big part of why this becomes a problem for our sex lives, because we know there's this very important connection between sex and sleep. And if you aren't sleeping well or you're not well rested, that can make it hard to feel sexual desire. It can interfere with sexual arousal and function. We also know that sex and sleep have a bidirectional relationship, right? So when we have sex or masturbate or have an orgasm, like, this actually makes it easier to fall asleep and you get better quality sleep, right? So when you have something like sleep disturbances, like, that can be in and of itself just one of the key things here that really disrupts people's intimate lives.
Absolutely. The other thing too with sleep is that's when our brain processes, that's when our body heals. And it's, again, one of those where sleep is not just sleep, and sleep does not just impact sex. It's hitting all of those other areas of your life that all impact one another. So absolutely.
Yeah. Sleep is so important. Okay. So let's talk about how to deal with work-related stress so that it doesn't disrupt or only minimally disrupts your intimate life, right? It might be elusive to say we can totally get rid of the work-related stress, but let's start with the folks who have those super high stress jobs that you work with, you know, military folks, first responders. Like, when you've got the stress like dialed up to the max, and maybe there's, you know, even complex trauma in the mix with it, what do you do in your clinical practice to try and help them get their sex lives and relationships back on track?
Absolutely. There's actually a lot of tools and skills that I'm giving clients to take home. So it's not just what we're doing in the therapy room. There's a lot of what they're doing at home. It's a lot of what they're doing in their relationships. And so one of the biggest things is learning to communicate about that stress, asking for space to vent, letting your partner know that right now I'm just looking for validation and acceptance. I don't need you to fix it. Unless you're like, hey, help me fix it, and kind of crowdsourcing options, but talking to your partner about what's going on and how it's affecting you so that really you can work as a partnership in order to work through it. And the nice thing about that is regardless of relationship structure, you get additional support or supports to help you with that. So base one, just talk about it. From that, really working on radical acceptance. There's going to be stressors outside of our control no matter what. And so if you continue to stress about those things that you can't change, you're putting your energy in places that you're not going to get it back. So accepting the fact that your libido is going to shift and change, accepting the fact that work might be stressful so that you can take that energy and invest it in other areas. Teaching clients about how to regulate their nervous system. So how can you use breathing? How can you use progressive muscle relaxation? How can you work on getting a hug from your partner and just sitting in that hug until you feel your body actually relax and you release that stress? That can be really helpful. Setting aside time when they get home from work to just de-stress and decompress. Sometimes that's listening to a silly podcast or your dance mix in the car on the way home. Sometimes that might mean intentionally shaking it off and brushing it off of you before you walk through the threshold of your house so you don't carry it in with you. And sometimes it really is looking at the environment of what you have at home. So making sure that you don't have reminders about work, sitting out. It might mean turning off work emails on your phone after a certain time if you're able to. So making sure that you set those time boundaries and those space boundaries so that you can have a better context or environment at home.
Yeah, I think what you said there definitely applies to people with the really high stress jobs, but would also apply to people with just the everyday jobs where, you know, you still come home at the end of the day and maybe you're exhausted or you're thinking about work or that argument that you had with a coworker or customer or something, right? So just one key thing in general is finding a way to try and set some boundaries so that, you know, who you are at work isn't coming home with you and you're not carrying all that baggage with you and all of your interactions with your partner. Now, setting boundaries is easier said than done. Like we hear this all the time, like it's time to set some boundaries, but how do you do this? Like if you're not somebody who's good at setting boundaries, like how do you start the process of that?
I think the biggest thing is identifying those times where you have a sense that a boundary is getting crossed. And I think the biggest thing is we have a narrative in our society right now that boundaries are, you're not going to talk to me like that, or you're not going to call me after work. When really boundaries are how you are going to respond to somebody else. And so when you feel like your time is getting encroached on, how can you choose to respond? If you have a boss that's calling you after hours, that might mean having a conversation of, I am paid from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. I've noticed I've been getting some calls after 5 p.m. Just as a heads up, that's my family time. I won't be answering calls after that, but please feel free to put an email in my inbox. I'll respond to it tomorrow morning. For a lot of people, I say, write it down first. So when you notice you feel like a line is getting crossed, what line is getting crossed? What is it that you want to do about it? And how might you actually say that to somebody? And it's totally okay to go back and edit that until it feels like something you could actually say to somebody and start small. So start with like the lower risk, the ones that even if you do it wrong, there's not going to be too much of a consequence so that you can slowly build up that assertiveness to speak up for yourself.
Yeah. As you were talking about this, I couldn't help but start to think about how these boundaries will need to be negotiated between the partners. And different partners might have different ways that they might prefer to deal with stress or to kind of set those boundaries so that, you know, work isn't always coming home with them. And I'm thinking about my own like personal life and relationship here and how, you know, at the end of the day, the first thing my partner likes to do is say, how was your day? And talk about it. And it's like, for me, oftentimes that's the last thing I want to do. It's like reliving trauma to repeat everything that I went through that day. And it's like, that's the last thing I want to do because it just brings work back to the forefront and makes it the focus. And so, you know, my partner, I think, is well-intentioned in asking this is like a sign of curiosity and interest. But for me, it's like triggering, right? And so you got to find some way to balance that. And then there's also something else you mentioned earlier with your partner providing the kind of support that you need. And sometimes people want to try and fix your problems for you. And sometimes you just want to talk about them, right? You know, that's an issue that comes up for me often as well is I just want to talk things through. I don't need you to fix this for me, but my partner, well-intentioned, will often want to try and fix them and suggest solutions, right? I think this is relatable. I think a lot of us go through this at different points in our relationships. And even if you have really good communication, you still struggle with it at times. But can you just speak a little bit to that importance of like, how can you like try and meet your partner's needs in this area when your needs might be very different from theirs?
Absolutely. Biggest things are asking consent, right? So do you have space to talk or are you asking for solutions or do you just want to vent, right? So before you share or before you respond, clarifying what the intent is, right? The other thing that you can do is if you know that you have a pretty regular need, telling your partner about that. Hey, I know you like to hear about my day, but that's really stressful for me. I wonder instead of asking how my day was, maybe ask me what it is I need right now. And that can be a big difference. Or, you know, instead of asking me how my day was, just give me a hug.
Or a massage.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I think the biggest thing though, is I know that that implies that you have to be able to know what it is that you want or what it is that you're seeking. And so I do tell people to stop and pause and check in with themselves before they have those conversations or before they make those requests of other people.
Yeah, you have to know what it is that you want and what you need. And you as a partner have to be willing to meet your partner where they are, because you won't always be on the same page about these things. But what we do know from the vast literature on social support is that social support is most effective when you have what we call optimal matching, where the type of support that's provided is the type of support that's needed. Because if one partner has a need and the other partner is offering a type of support that doesn't meet their need, it doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. So it's finding that way to meet in the middle. Now, I got to ask, is work-life balance even actually possible to achieve? I mean, we hear this term thrown around all the time, but a heck of a lot of us seem to struggle with it, myself included. You know, I keep saying I'm going to find the balance. And I actually did for like a glorious hot minute before COVID happened and changed everything, like 2018, 2019, best years of my life. Like everything was working great with the job and I had this great friendship circle and I was having the best sex and the most sex of my life. And like everything was just great in all regards. Then COVID happened and everything got all fucked up and it just never got back to the same place it was before. Like it's slowly gotten better. But I really struggle with the work-life balance thing because during COVID, I took on all these new projects and other things just to keep myself busy, to be distracted, to have something to do. And now it's like, shit, how do I get rid of like all this extra work? So what are your thoughts on it? Is work-life balance achievable? Do you have it? How do I get it?
I do think that it is achievable. I think one of the biggest things, though, is knowing that sometimes there are obligations that we have at work that there's nothing we can do about it, right? There are going to be sometimes that we have more obligations at home and there's nothing that we can do about it. Sometimes we have needs that just aren't going to get met. And so it's about being able to be flexible and being able to triage and prioritize. And I'm saying this as somebody who I work full time in a practice. I run a nonprofit on the side. I teach. I pick up lots of side quests, right? And run relationships, and I'm a parent, and. And I had the opposite experience of you. COVID made me reset all of my priorities, and I walked out of the pandemic with a better work-life balance. And it's about being able to speak up. It's about being able to be honest with myself in a lot of ways of when I am overextending myself, and understanding that we are all doing the best that we can within a capitalistic society.
Yes, I know. I wish I would have followed your trajectory for this and have come out on the other side better off. But one thing I have found that is important to learn how to do, but it's really hard, is to learn how to say no,
yeah,
right? And you know, we talk about this a lot in the area of sexual consent and how no is sometimes the hardest word to say in the bedroom. But no, just in general, in daily life, is a really hard thing to say, especially when people are offering you opportunities for work. And for me, as somebody who's self-employed, I don't know when the work is going to come along or is the work going to stop at some point. And so it can be hard to say no to things because you don't want to pass up certain opportunities and you don't know when the next opportunity is going to be. But it's one of the things that I've learned I have to get better at, is just being able to say no, feeling empowered to do that. But a lot of people really struggle with it.
Definitely. And I think it's one of those things where we notice a lot of those things that we might say are happening just in the bedroom or just in regards to sex aren't just in the bedroom and just in regards to sex. It's an overall pattern. And so a lot of times I work with people about practice saying no. In fact, say no to some things that actually you might even be a yes to, just to remind yourself that your no has power and you're able to do it. Or do it with somebody that you've already pre-negotiated. I'm trying to say no. So you might notice me saying it more than I ever have. Just, can I have some reassurance that it's okay for me to do this? And so practice with friends, practice with partners, practice with yourself in the mirror.
Practice saying no.
Yep. And I think another big thing too is acknowledging when the boundaries being crossed are times when you're doing it to yourself. So when are you overextending yourself? When are you overcommitting yourself? And really being honest about how you might be able to shift and change those priorities. Because that's so important in order to put some priority back on personal life, on your relationships, on sex, and prioritizing those feel-good parts of life.
Yeah, I love all of that. And learning how to say no is so important, such a valuable skill. It was when I was in academia, was one of the most important things I had to learn how to do, was you have to say no sometimes, because if you don't, people will just keep coming to you and asking you for more and more and more. And I think that's why so many academics are so burnt out, because they never learned how to say no. So we need to learn how to do this in all aspects of life so that we can try and find some of that balance. Mm-hmm. So at the top of the show, I talked about how the relationship between work stress and sex is bidirectional. And we've talked a lot about how work can interfere with sex. So let's talk about the other side of the coin. Let's talk about how sex can help us to deal with work stress. So what are some of the ways in which sex or sexual connection can help us to deal with or cope with stress?
Absolutely. This one's fun because we have so much research that actually shows how a good sex life and fulfilling relationships actually makes us better workers and better people in general. And so we know that partnered sex and solo sex, masturbation, both of those are incredibly helpful in improving psychological health. We also know that for women in particular, partnered sex seems to have a little bit better of an impact. A lot of that has to do with some cultural influences on, you know, your own pleasure being centered and focus on you. But either way, being able to engage in sex tends to improve psychological health and improve our mood. When we know that people are feeling good, when they have good hormones like oxytocin and dopamine, they tend to be more focused and more productive. So when you're having better sex, you show up focused at work. Just make sure the sex happens at home and work happens at work. See, that's more of that like work-life balance.
Yeah. Work-life, sex-life balance. Yes. You know what you were saying? I've read that research. I'm familiar with it and I love it. It makes so much sense to me that, you know, on days when you have sex, you're actually more productive in the workplace the next day because you've got that afterglow effect that happens when we engage in sexual activity, where there's this boost in mood and an increase in concentration and focus. And so it can actually make us better at our jobs when we have a healthy sex life. I'm also reminded of a recent study I saw. It came out earlier this year, finding that, you know, people who take masturbation work breaks during the day are also more productive on the job. But, you know, that gets back to that issue of balance and where are you taking your masturbation break? And you got to make sure you don't cross any lines with all of that. I mean, we know from COVID that, you know, you definitely don't want to be in the midst of a Zoom meeting or have your camera on when that happens.
No. I think what we see with overall with that is making sure that you're prioritizing mental health, prioritizing what it is that you need to get done, and making sure that you really are doing things safely and boundaried. And so maybe taking your breaks before you go into the office or as soon as you get home, right? Please don't try to do that while you're at work because of your poor coworkers. But I think it's important to understand though, that like having that connection with yourself and all of the hormones that it releases, it can absolutely help you be more productive. And we know that those hormones that release really do induce a state of recovery for individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're a long way off from businesses installing masturbation rooms in their campuses for people to utilize. But, you know, hey, if the evidence grows, I wouldn't be surprised if someone tries it at some point.
Exactly.
So I also want to ask, what are some ways that we can prioritize sex in our lives so that we can help tap into the stress relieving benefits? So, you know, as we've been talking about, work-life balance, tough to achieve, but we need to prioritize sex. And that can be one way of helping us to achieve that. So should we schedule it? Or can we do something else to make it a priority?
So I know that people hate the idea of scheduling sex. However, again, I'm a research nerd. We actually have some research that shows that putting it on the calendar and committing to it and having that expectation between partners actually increases the likelihood that there'll be follow through. The other thing that I work with my clients on is if you're scheduling sex, but you come to that moment in time and one or both of you just is not feeling it, can you negotiate alternatives that still foster intimacy and closeness? So, okay, somebody might not be up for sex, but maybe can you snuggle? Are you up for just a makeout? Do you want to watch a TV show together? Do you want to take a bath together? Is there something else that you can do that isn't being in separate rooms, still doing work, right? The other thing that you could do is consider doing a quickie, right? It does not have to be a long, drawn out, super romantic, rose petals on the bed sort of ordeal. Maybe it's just a couple minutes set aside with your partner or with yourself just to get those feel-good endorphins from it. Another thing that I work with people on is being present in the body. So engaging in sex or engaging in masturbation just for the experience and just for the sensations, not aiming for a particular goal. Because sometimes when we're goal oriented, we get lost on the journey and it gets in our way of getting there.
Yeah. So scheduling intimacy, I think, is another way to think about this, right? So it's not like you're going to say, all right, Friday, 9:30 p.m., intercourse, right? you know, so instead of like locking yourself into a very specific sexual activity, it can just be, okay, here's this time or period in our calendars where we're just going to connect with one another. And it could just be, we're going to see where it goes. Like maybe we're just going to start by cuddling and watching a show together. And if something else happens, great. But if it doesn't, that's also fine, right? So there's all kinds of ways that you can do this, or it can be scheduling date nights. Like it doesn't have to be centered around, let's put, you know, a specific kind of sex on the calendar and we're committed to doing it at this particular hour, because like that just feels very rigid. So, you know, be flexible and think about it as scheduling intimacy or making time for intimacy.
The only caveat that I would put on that is, in particular, if the individuals are wanting to have more sex, sometimes putting intimacy on the calendar has a built-in avoidance mechanism. And so if what they're wanting to actually do is have more sex, make it as sex and then negotiate alternatives if you need to. If what you're trying to do is just have more intimacy, more time together, absolutely take it and see where it goes. And it's totally okay to have a focus on that non-sexual touch, that just physical proximity to one another. And that sometimes can lead to more sex down the road.
Yeah. So it all goes back to knowing what your needs are, identifying your goals, and then making a plan to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. We just have to be intentional with all the time that we have.
We do. Well, thank you so much for this amazing conversation, Amanda. It was a pleasure to have you here. Can you please tell my listeners where they can go to learn more about you and your work?
Absolutely. So primary place you can find out more about me is ReSpark Foundation. That's the nonprofit that I run that serves survivors of sexual harm from a sex positive and trauma informed perspective. Other than that, you can learn more about me on the UCCS Veterans Health and Trauma Clinic website. So that's where I do all of my work with veterans, active duty, and first responders.
Well, thank you again so much for your time, and thank you for the important work that you do. I really appreciate having you here.
Absolutely. Thank you for the fantastic conversation.
Thank you for listening. To keep up with new episodes of this podcast, visit my website, Sex and Psychology, at sexandpsychology.com, or subscribe on your favorite platform, where I hope you'll take a moment to rate and review the show. You can also follow me on the socials for daily sex research updates. I'm on Twitter and TikTok at Justin Lehmiller and Instagram at Justin J. Lehmiller. Also, be sure to check out my book, Tell Me What You Want. And if you have a question you'd like me to answer on a future episode of this show, you can leave me a podcast voicemail at speakpipe.com/sexandpsychology. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.